I'm Christopher Lydon with a homegrown story about, as the saying goes, the essential human value of people expressing themselves freely. This is open source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. Every spring at Brown, the novelist Robert Coover puts one unfree country in the spotlight for writers' attention. This year, it's Cambodia, whose exiled poets and story writers are here in numbers. But for Americans who came to learn how to help, it was a local activist from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who stole the show. Henry Reese of the Asylum Project in the old steel town. I got to say, when you spoke up, I thought I was listening to This American Life, and I thought, the radio audience has got to hear this story.
Thank you, Chris. It's hard to understand what free speech means to an American when we take it for granted. Mm. And I've seen in our community the impacts of a program that we run which provides sanctuary for writers in exile. We provide a house, a living income, medical benefits, and other adjustments to life in exile. We provide those benefits for 2 years with the goal of making sure that the writer continues to write while in exile, because it was a strategy of bad regimes to exile writers because it was a form of silencing them. And creating new readers for these writers is a really important function, not necessarily reading them in their own language, but appreciating them as writers and beginning to understand why that power should reverberate ourselves through ourselves in our own communities, and why this is such an important, not just issue, but why it's important to read and read well and imagine in our own lives. So that's the basis of our project. We were fortunate in many ways in that the first writer who came to our program was a Chinese poet, Wang Zhang. Wang Zhang had been in prison for roughly 12 years, incarcerated seven different times, had been very badly treated, had never been allowed to publish. When he came to Pittsburgh, the first night we took him out to a Chinese restaurant on the one side of town. We asked everybody what's one that will be the least Pittsburghian and the most Chinese. And we were given the name. We took him there, and I'm not sure that it still impressed him very much. But we're driving down the river, and Pittsburgh is filled with rivers. And if you look across it, there's this very high sort of mountain. And the Chinese writer, who only speaks Chinese, says to his wife in Chinese something. And it appears that he's saying to us he would like to carve his poetry into the side of this mountain, Mount Washington. And I tried to explain to him that this was that maybe we should set our scales a little lower. And my wife, who's a visual artist, Diane Samuels, suggested that maybe we could have him do his poetry on the outside of the house that he was going to live in. And he warmed up to that, and he was a calligrapher in a very free-form style called grass style, which is expressionistic. So he might write a whispering word in a really small font, and he might write a shout in a giant letter. And it's all very hard to read, apparently, even for Chinese. And so he resettled in Pittsburgh, and as the first thing he did, he immediately zoomed into, I got to do the house. I mean, he's there literally a day. So we put up scaffolding, and I'm outside standing watching because I'm a little nervous that he's going to fall off the scaffolding. He wouldn't strap himself to it. He was very expressive and sort of dancing around, and I was always sort of saying, watch this, do this. And three little kids came down the street at that point. They look up and watch the Chinese poet who's painting, and they have that kind of puzzled look, and I say, he's a famous Chinese poet. And, you know, famous is a very compelling, and it was the operative word for getting their attention. Chinese meant nothing to them, and poet was conceptually, I'm not sure, anything that they'd ever reckoned with. So they said, okay, because famous got their attention. So I got the Chinese poet down from the scaffolding, and I said, would you like him to read one of his poems? In fact, he can read you this house because that's his poetry. So he'll read the house to you. And they really sort of, you know, that kind of pose, they kind of got real sassy looking and said, yeah, sure, show me. And so the Chinese poet then gets up, starts to get closer and closer and closer to the young lady at the front, and is probably his nose is maybe 2 inches from hers, and he lets out a blood-curdling scream at the top of his lungs, like shouting just totally, and so she jumps back like just scared, and he begins to recite a poem, and then he jumps onto the ground and rolls around and continues to recite, and then he gets up. It's about 30 seconds. It's a very short poem. And their jaws are, I mean, I've literally were dropped. And they're staring at me and they said, could he read another one, please? And that's when I knew, in a way, that freedom of expression was going to resonate with people who had no connection with what we'll call literary life, and that this could be a very powerful force for change in our community, and which is what it's become.
What's the community?
The community is the central north side of Pittsburgh. It's a very kind of demographically complicated community. We live on a street called Sampsonia Way, which is an alley that is about 20 feet wide and 800 feet long with no entrance or exit except at the ends. To the south of our area is a gentrified area that's a certified historic district. So there are all these period restored buildings. To the north is one of the poorer areas in the city. So the writers are situated in this community where they've turned out to be very much a bridge among people who themselves did not often connect. This whole street, we've developed a series of houses now. The Chinese poet was really the sort of inspiration and in many ways the creator of our own imaginations when we saw the evocative power of what pure, unfettered, free expression could do. When he came here, he did this house. He said he wanted to both celebrate his freedom and thank the people of Pittsburgh by doing this public artwork for allowing his voice to be heard. At the first really public performance we held, it was in the rain, and probably 150 people came, all holding umbrellas, watching him read his house and performing. And the next day, all of a sudden, people began slipping little poems through his door, and people reacted to the presence of the writer. So as we began to expand our program over time, we've now rehabbed a series of 4 houses on Sampsonia Way. We're in the process of doing a small apartment building now as a 5th and trying to create what we call a row of house publications or a public library, each with a text in a different language. As you walk down the street, you're inhabiting what a poet actually has called a space of the imagination, reminding you of just how powerful this can be in your own lives. And it's allowed the writer, as part of a residential community, to re-inhabit a space of ordinary life and to permeate others' ordinary lives the way you would in an ordinary way, certainly as an exile, but also part of a living community.
And I must say, this sounds like an ancient fable or something of how the prisoner was liberated, sent to another land, and he took freedom to a free place in a new way, a sort of Johnny Appleseed, except he's seeding poems.
Well, the most recent writer is from Burma, and when she first came, she had a dream. It was somewhere between a dream and a nightmare, I would say. And she wrote it in Burmese, and it was about coming to Pittsburgh and the merging of sort of Pittsburgh in Burma, the rivers, the Irrawaddy and these rivers that we talked about in Pittsburgh. And in this dream, these two countries began to sort of float back and forth. And so her husband is a visual artist, and he took that and he painted the entire facade of the house, the front and the side. On the one side is Burma, and on the front is this Pittsburgh scene. And it's got the buildings in one case, and then it's got a Burmese scene in a very different style, almost like a Picasso Demoiselle d'Avignon or something, that kind of cubist bit of tortured kind of figures. And the front is all kind of glittery, but these rivers meet in the at the corner. And it's all in Burmese on this house. So as people watch it, they see Chinese, and then they see English writing from Willie Soyinka. They see this Burmese. We don't know what – well, the fourth house is actually mostly visuals. It's a jazz house because we do a big concert with jazz and poets from around the world.
I was going to ask, what does an asylum for free expression on Samsonia Way in Pittsburgh do for an encore after all this? But then you just mentioned Willie Soyinka.
Yes. The Chinese writer, again, was an inspiration of sorts. When we saw what a good performer he was of his own work, we became very interested in understanding how we could use that talent to help him get his work out and us out to a degree, because in that sense he embodied what we were doing on the stage. And we thought two things. One, jazz music – the artists know how to dialogue, and they know what solos are, and they know what group activity is. And it's an emblem of, in a way, of what we're trying to do in creating a civil society where people listen to one another and have their individual voices but still maintain some kind of group ensemble characteristic to be able to move forward. And we thought that type of musician would work well with others. And
bring it home, Henry. Should every old inner city in America invite a Chinese poet or a writer in exile from somewhere to come and paint a vacant house in a neighborhood that needs a lift?
Unfortunately, the problem is bigger than that. But if we abstract it at one level, yes, it's very empowering to approach your neighbor with a certain level of civility. That occurs when you bring in other people from the outside and welcome these very strange imaginations that have suffered, but also have overcome it in their own ways, or not been given into it. And there's a certain joy and sometimes a very deep sadness that the different writers have that is so compellingly human that it reminds you, without saying anything, of what it is like to live life and to engage over long periods of time with your own experience in productive ways. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't engage with American imaginations either, but it makes it actually easier to remember the vitality when you see it in danger. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how else to say it.
Henry Reese, I'm so glad to hear your story. I'm so grateful to you for sharing it. Thank you. And more power to the asylum on Samsonia Way. Ben Mandelkern produced and edited this conversation. It isn't over until you feed back on our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Leiden. Thank you for being part of the conversation.